This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing as directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 532, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Doctor, everything will be alright. Instead of asking how much of your time is left, ask him how much of your mind, baby. Cause in this life, things are much harder than in the afterworld. This life, you're on your own. And if the elevator tries to break you down,
hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 532. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Back to normal.
And Josh Flanagan. Are we ever normal?
I was literally just cataloged, like, what does normal mean for us? And I couldn't. Well, I'm going to need 2 or 3 weeks to think on.
At least recovering from last week's fun time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's true.
We ain't normal.
Look at these guys. They look normal, but they ain't.
We are iFanboy, and we like comics. Every week we stack up our comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books, talk about other stuff, read some listener mail, have a fun time. And here's a spoiler warning. It's a review show, so there'll be some spoilers. Exercise your caution. And in the meantime, Josh.
Number two.
Criminal.
I literally didn't know who I threw a coin in the air.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you something. When you, oh yeah, it says Ron. Yeah. Well, when you were saying it, I thought, what was the pick again? And I had to look at the script.
Yep.
So that's where I am. I like Criminal 10th anniversary special. So I have made it my pick of the week this week on episode
32. That was awesome. That's why.
32. Yeah. There are a lot of comic books this week. It was like, we've had some light weeks in a row with good books in them and everything, but there was just a ton. Good books too. But normally in a week like this, and I get to a book that's as thick as this book, I think, oh, that's going to take a long time. But once I started, man, it's a page turner. You're going through all the way. And what was cool is that I'm definitely starting to lose some mental faculty to the point where I can remember what's been happening and stuff. And I haven't read Criminal in a while. So I was like, at first, I was like, who are these people or whatever? And then it totally came back to me when they said, you're Tracy and you're Teague, and I was like, right, okay, cool.
Yeah, the moment I saw Teague, I was like, oh, not awesome. Like I made the connections, yeah. Just like it's like a Lego piece is snapped into place, and I was like, yep. So
and it worked, and yeah. Like the story's not like so complicated that I have to remember a ton about it. I go, oh, these guys, right? That was the dad. He's an asshole. They're criminals. Cool. It's called
all
criminal.
You need to know, really. That's all you need to know.
It totally is. And again, I think we've said this anytime we've ever talked. I feel like the last time there was a special, it was Pick of the Week.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. I'd say this just like I did then. Like, you could just pick this up. If you're listening to this and you've really, like, you know, now I really do think I should try Criminal. This book is $5 and, you know, it's oversized and you should read it. So Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips Return.
Before you go, I will amend that. You should go to the comic book store now and not only pick this up, but make sure you pick up, if you can, the oversized magazine variant. Because I went to my comic shop specifically to pick that up, and it is just it's delightful. It's the big magazine edition, and
you know that's your new word.
What, big?
Delightful.
Delightful. It's delightful.
Every week I hear something is delightful. I don't know if you realize that pattern. And listen, I just want to make this clear. Not complaining.
But the oversized magazine variant's got a different cover that ties into the content of the book, and it's just and reading it in this format was just so much fun. So pick it up while you can. I imagine it's extremely limited, but it's definitely worth picking up. So
what we have here is a road trip adventure between a criminal and his son. As he has to go take care of some business, and he took his son along with him hastily. Not a lot of love lost between these two characters, but they have a sort of interesting relationship that you get to watch through the whole thing. Then you keep wondering, well, how's this going to play out? Not well, by the way, is the answer to that. And
that's usually how all criminal stories play out.
Yeah, there's not really – if you're waiting for that moment, it's not coming.
Well, it's interesting because we all love Criminal. It's probably my favorite thing that Brubaker and Phillips do together. As much as I love the fade out, I think whenever they do Criminal, it's the best. But Josh, you and I had a lot of trouble with David Lapham's book.
Help us out, Ron.
Stray Bullets.
Hey. Stray Bullets.
Yep.
And I wonder what the difference is between the two, because they're both sort of bleak, but I think there's slightly more heart in Criminal, if strangely.
Well, I don't know if there's more heart. There's a difference. There's definitely a subtle difference.
Yeah.
I mean, because I mean, I think Stray Bullets is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to comics, and I think Criminal is too. But they're for different reasons. And
is it because Stray Bullets is more nihilist?
Yes.
Criminal isn't?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's okay. That's it.
Yeah. There's definitely an edge of humanity that kind of exists in Criminal that you see, you know, there's nice characters in here and they didn't all get killed. They didn't all get killed. Like if this book was Stray Bullets, the little girl would have been killed. The bookshop guy would have gotten a nail in his eye. Like, and the other person who got killed would have been like, it would have been.
He would have made his son kill the little girl.
No, amend that. What would have happened was that the son and the little girl would have realized they're in love, and then the father would make the son kill her, and it would just be horrible. And yeah,
that's exactly the difference. And that little bit of, because at the end there's a slight. Well, it's not exactly hope, but at least it's just sadness, and it's not like utter tragedy.
Right.
When he has to. So basically, little kid goes along. He ends up with a comic book, like just an old, crappy, weird '70s comic book about a kung fu werewolf,
which
character.
Is awesome.
It's not that old. They're in the '70s themselves. It's only a couple.
Right. But it was. He said it was like 5 years old then.
Yeah, no, I got the sense that the book opens at summer 1979, and I got the sense that this comic, well, it says the comic is from 74, which felt like five years old.
They said 5 years old. So, yeah. It to him, you know, if you're a little kid, 5 years old, very old.
Fang the Kung Fu Werewolf.
If they chose to do Fang the Kung Fu Werewolf as a separate comic, I think I would read it.
Yes. That's fine. I'm fairly sure I would.
The pages were awesome because it intersperses every, like, almost like chapter breaks or whatever. Every couple of scenes, it breaks into the old retro comic with pages from the comic, and they were awesome. Sean Phillips drawing old Marvel style in the '70s is like, it's perfect.
Josh, didn't he do this also with the last special?
Yes.
Yeah. That's not. It must have been like, you know, it was really fun.
Yeah.
Drawing those style comic books in black and white. Can we do that? And also, it's great. He's got such range, and it's just all the, like, if you look at the ink on the older pages and the dot pitch, and oh, it's so good. Also, I just need to point out again, Sean Phillips is still the best guy drawing cars. Yeah. He's really, really good at drawing cars, and I love to look at them. I had fun with this right away when I sort of placed where I was, which is, it doesn't work for some comics, but in this, you're like, oh, we're going, and we don't really know where we are or who we're looking at, and then it sort of falls into place, it was a great story. It was a heartbreaker at the end, but it didn't make me want to kill myself, so.
Yeah, so they come to town, the dad's looking for someone, and he disappears for 3 days, so the kid's on his own, and he decides he's on a hunt for another issue, because the comic he has is just one issue of this story. He wants to read more of it, so he's on a hunt for more issues. Meets a little girlfriend, and then things all go sideways and everybody. So I'm always happy. I was worried. I guess I forgot about that last special at the time I picked this up, and I was worried this was going to be like a reprint. But I was so happy because I think, like I said earlier, Criminal is the best thing that Brubaker and Phillips do together. And anytime they want to come back, even for one issue.
Yeah, I had the same thing. Wait, did I read this already? Nope, we're good.
Yeah. I mean, and it really, it's funny because it's interesting because this is like a taste of what made us fall in love with them as a team, right? I mean, like Sleeper was the first one that really were like, oh, here's something special. Once they started coming out with Criminal, it was like, oh, man, this is amazing.
No, we did something before Sleeper. The Vertigo Image reprinted it.
Oh yes! I love that. What was it? Scene of the crime.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, once they started doing Criminal and banging out, like they've done with this like five or six trades of Criminal stories, and it was like, oh man, these are amazing. And you get the sense that okay, they wanted to go do something different, and they do Fatale, they do the Fade Out, they announced the new book that they're doing at Image Expo. But every now and then, it's like they come back to this universe, and it reminds you of just like, oh, this is perfection. And I don't know if it's like I'm mad that they don't just do this ongoing, or is it that this makes this big oversized one shot makes me savor it even that much more because we're getting less? You know what I mean? Like,
I think that.
Yeah.
I actually like this. When Brubaker was doing Captain America, we got spoiled. You know, Brubaker adapting, and we're like, oh, it's good again. You know, whatever. This, you know, it's like Frank Quitely. I don't want monthly Frank Quitely. I recognize that now.
Yeah.
I will take it when I can get it. I think it's better for that.
Right. Okay.
That's fair. I always want more of everything.
We're Americans. What do you expect?
Yeah.
Well, we're Americans in a digital age where we're just like used to getting now every single thing we want all the time immediately. And so this is nice.
Yeah.
This is great if you like crime stories. This particular issue, how many pages is it? It's big. It isn't numbered, but you get a really great, complete short story here. It's not like a 20-page book where you feel like there could have been more. This is a full-on short story. Yep. It's the beginning, middle, and an end. It's satisfying. It tells the whole thing. It's great. And if you like this, you've never read Criminal before, as Ron said, Image just put out six new – I mean, there were six trades of Criminal. They put out six new versions of them last year, I think. And they're all great. They're the beautiful – they're the primary-colored covers and – I can't recommend those six trades more.
It's almost like 64 or 72 pages or something. It's big.
Feels like it's triple sized, but it may not be.
Yeah,
yeah. It's definitely worth the five. It's definitely worth the $5. You know,
absolutely.
Like if you're pausing at the price tag, don't, because it's worth it. And even the oversized magazine variant at $6 is totally worth it as well too. So yeah, so
it's worth it for Fang the Kung Fu Werewolf.
Exactly. Really. I want more Fang. Big,
the pages were like slightly discolored. It was great.
Big fan of Fang. So say that just, five times fast.
Just want
Fang. Big fan of Fang.
He liked the girl, but it was his best friend's girl. What are you supposed to do?
It's so Marvel. It was so Marvel.
It was so it was. It was great.
It was great.
Let's move along. We'll talk about number sixes. Thor, Mighty Thor number six. Which was a nice diversion, I thought.
And for a moment, I was like, oh, is this just a one-shot? But this is, like, to be continued. Like, this is going to continue.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. At least into another part. So what you've got here is we open, and, you know, I'll admit to a little, oh, we're going to open on Dario from Roxxon. Okay, that's fine. Oh, and he's talking to Lower East Side Thor, or Loki. But then we break into a story.
Yeah.
And he tells a tale of old Thor.
Axe-wielding Thor.
Yeah, yeah. What's that?
Wait, mixed it up. You said Yarnborn, yeah. An old tale of young Thor.
Yes.
Not a tale of old Thor, which is old man one arm Thor. Rather,
also good.
Yeah, an old tale of young Thor with Yarnborn. Yes.
So then Yarnborn. We switch from Russell Dowderman to Rafa Garris, who's doing sort of a much more raw sort of storytelling style, sort of just almost like smeared paint, you know, in a more primitive sort of look. But it's super dynamic. And it's a story of a human who got Thor on his side and got too big for himself. It's like if you have a best friend. It's like if Turtle got really, really self-involved during Entourage, and then he learned that he really, in fact, did need Adrian Brody. No, not Adrian Brody. Adrian, what's his name?
Grenier.
Well, that show would be different with Adrian Brody, although not much. Anyway, it was just a really fun story and a turn, and if, you know, I don't even want to put it this way, but if you wanted to sort of get away from the current goings on with the Jane Foster Thor, then this has none of that in it. It's just old Thor myth tale, and I really dug it.
And the Rafa Garris art was real, definitely a departure from Russell Dowderman, as it should. And it had that mythical art, you know, painted, you know, like it felt like an old Norse story, you know what I mean? Like the art definitely, definitely fits the story. And and I was just like, this was like, once I turned the page, I was like, ooh, this is delightful. So
I really liked the design of, Loki.
Yes.
In this. Yeah. I love that, like, Loki's one of those characters that you can just draw a million different ways, and it's kind of always fun and has a point. Not unlike the Joker, really, but you have all that Norse stuff to work with, too. Yeah. And I was really happy when I got to the end and it said to be continued. I was like, all right, cool. Yeah. I'm down for more of this. I wasn't like, one issue was enough, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I really thought it was going to be, I thought this is like a breather issue, you know, to let Dowderman break or whatever, but if we're going to get another issue of this, sign me up. This is great. I really like young Thor with Yarnborn. I like the impulsiveness and the, you know, like it's an approach to Thor that we, you know, before Jason Aaron came up with it, that we've never really seen, and I find it really engaging. So
it's also like the Thor that exists now is a major media property, so he can have some of that gusto, but they can't take all that many risks with him, I don't think, in sort of making him a jerk, as he would be if he was a big, tall, beautiful, blonde, powerful god. And this one, you're like, nope, hasn't learned any humility yet. Yeah. And so you can really sort of let it rip, which I think is got to be one of the fun things about writing it.
Yeah, I like it I like it when they let my comics rip.
Yeah, you know,
you just let it rip. Let it rip.
So, I just have a question about
beneath you, Josh.
Beneath you? Really was beneath you.
You know what? It wasn't meant in that way, but I could see how it would be. It's more like an engine going off.
See. Okay, it was like a loud motorcycle going by or something.
It didn't translate. Yeah. It was not a fart joke.
Okay. You are no Michael Winslow, is what we're learning.
Is anyone?
No.
There was a time though where that would have been my number one career goal. I mean, like a lot of other kids wanted to play baseball or do whatever, and I was like, I want to do what that guy does. That's not even a joke. Is there a character in comics right now who you feel more affection for than Hook?
No,
but that's what made this issue that much more disappointing for me.
Oh. Interesting.
I really feel as if he didn't stick the landing.
Really?
I really felt I didn't stick the landing. I mean, it ended and we got a nice story and that sort of thing. I really liked the first half of this much better than the latter half.
I see where you're coming from.
Yeah,
but
you didn't like the Russian scientist stuff.
I didn't like the Russian scientist stuff. Yeah, no, that's what I mean. This issue didn't really do it for me. This issue, I mean, like it was very heavy on Huck's mother. You know, I like the last half of the issue once they resolve the Russian scientist stuff, and then he got back to his list. That made me smile. But it just kind
that's
of felt,
why, that's why this issue was so great. I thought because yeah, it got back to
I agree
showed that it showed that he wasn't changed or broken by his experience. He was still who he was.
Yeah,
and he got back to normal basically.
That was the moment too for me where it was watching him fight and like and he only had to beat up robots. He didn't have to beat up people, so he could get away with that without sort of ruining the character.
Rip.
Yeah, and then when he's like, rip. When yeah. he really like sincerely was like, I have to get back to doing good things.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, fuck.
I did like when how they caught the Russian scientist, how he threw the streetlight like very far. Like it was just like the feats that Huck can do are really great. I don't know. I guess I'm being a little more harsh on this issue because it's more I'm being harsh on the last third of the story. I think.
He moved in with his mom.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was nice.
Helped him pull the lady across the street. It's all good. It's great.
Yeah.
He's such a good. In comparison to Batman versus Superman, it's like you're reading this and you're like, no, that's what I want to see. I don't care if he's simple.
Well, we're gonna get to it later. But I think the fact that I think I was also hurt by the reading order. In fact, that the fact that I read this after Astro City this week, and we'll that'll be a tease for later in the show.
Sure.
But yeah. So.
I like this a lot. Yeah.
I like the whole thing.
I liked all of it.
I liked all these issues.
So we got a surprise this week when Panel Syndicate dropped another book, which is what they do. This time it was The Walking Dead, The Alien, the much anticipated Walking Dead short story that Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin did. And then they struck a deal with Kirkman, right, Ron, to publish their Private Eye at Image in paper format if they got to do this issue. Is that how it worked?
I believe so.
Yeah, so this was the first time anyone's ever done The Walking Dead. That's not been Robert Kirkman.
Yeah, it's the first time anyone that's written The Walking Dead aside from Robert, and anyone's drawn it aside from Tony Moore or Charlie Adlard, at least story pages, not pinups and covers and things like that.
Did Otley did the
Otley did the weird the 75 the joke.
So
yeah, so
Otley, I wondered then if this is that title is sort of a comment jokey thing on the fact that it was pitched with aliens.
Yes, I think so.
That's great.
Yeah.
And for anyone who doesn't know, The Walking Dead originally was pitched to Image not as a zombie book, but as an alien book that it would be revealed that aliens were responsible for the zombie outbreak. And I think it was Valentino who said, yeah, let's do it. And then Kirkman just never brought the aliens in. Had no intention of bringing aliens in.
Yeah.
They needed the alien concept.
The argument was that nobody would read a zombie book. And
right.
So. But
for years he's been saying he's going to bring the aliens in at some point, but
yeah,
it's been a joke.
that's called misreading the market.
Yeah.
that's Decca saying, I don't think this Beatles thing is going to work out. I mean, wow.
How could you have known at the time? The thing is that now we get into more history, but at the time that was the by the book, by the numbers, that was the accurate assessment, was that nobody buy. And if you look at the numbers, they were right. Like the first 10 issues of Walking Dead barely sold anything. And
season of Seinfeld didn't get any viewers.
Right, exactly. I mean, and it's a similar thing to Steve Jobsian quote or whatever, where it's like, you know, this is the way we always do things. Don't do that. You know, like it's the people who take the risks are the ones who get rewarded. And so just glad that they was able to survive and stick with it and whatever it took to do it. And that's, you know, and at whatever point when it picked up and the sales started going crazy, then it's because it was based on the quality and not because of this is what works or this is what doesn't work or whatnot. And so it becomes a phenomenon. So that's good. That said, it's funny when this dropped. I don't keep up with the Panel Syndicate as much. Like I didn't keep up with when the Private Eye actually the days it came out. But like, do they always coordinate with? Like it was smart that they dropped it on Wednesday.
No, it's always random days of the week.
Yeah, I thought it was always random days of the week, but this one was on Wednesday, which I feel like was calculated. Yeah.
They need to do that more often.
Agreed. Yeah, and this just took a very long time to do, which I'm baffled by. Because there's not a lot. It's sparse. There's no color. You know, it's black and white. You know, but apparently they even like BKV on Twitter even apologized for how long it took to get this done.
He's a little busy.
Yeah, true.
All right. Well,
that said,
you guys
what do you
read it?
Yeah. What do you think of it? Yeah, I read it. What do you think of it?
I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it a lot.
I was a little disappointed.
This is Ron's cornflake shit week.
No, I mean, I thought it was good. I mean, seeing Marcos Martín work in black and white was absolutely interesting. I can see the desire to make the main character who he did, but once I figured that out, I went, ah. You know, like, I wanted it not related to The Walking Dead at all, you know?
But that was the whole point. Did you know about, like,
what?
Were you aware of the brother? Like, I don't remember that. I read those forever ago.
Oh, yeah, no, I did not remember it at all, and it wasn't until in the dialogue that I put it together, and then when I read BKV's essay in the back, where he explained, you know, the mention and all that sort of stuff. But like the moment that it tied to it, I kind of the balloon deflated a little for me. That's all.
You didn't like that they made that
correct. I wanted it to be like this is you're completely somewhere else. You know, like I just wanted like a unique Brian K. Vaughan Walking Dead story in that universe. And
you know what I liked was, I know what you're saying, and there's a way that can be hokey, but also that is totally like Brian Vaughn writes stories like that's his thing. Like there's gonna be a thing like that.
Yeah.
Oh, he's connected. But also I think it connected nicely to the bit of selflessness in the beginning.
Yeah.
There was a moment. And also I really liked that it was in Spain and it really felt like a different culture and how that was react to it. That was really cool. And I am terrified that this will be I don't want Walking Dead all over the world because it's gonna be too much. But a little taste of it was very nice.
Yeah.
Well, you're getting that in TV shows, but I loved the knight. I love that the girl was from the museum and dressed up in the knight's armor and had the giant spear thing on her Vespa, like she was jousting with these. That was great. Those are the kind of touches that Brian K. Vaughan brings to this stuff. It's okay. She's a museum curator, so when this broke out, she just stole the knight armor and she's going around completely armored up like a knight from the Middle Ages.
I like that everybody else didn't go, fuck metal, right?
Right, exactly.
What is that?
They can't bite through that shit. I liked it. I thought it was, to use Ron's term, delightful. The art was delightful. I thought the character interactions were great.
I hope everyone at home likes hearing the word delightful, because we are going to ram that down your throat like we are thinking about it for months and months.
Delightful.
So I thought it was fine. I didn't remember. I'm just, you know, we gave a spoiler warning. This is that the main character was Rick's younger brother. I don't, you know, that was Walking Dead number 3. I don't remember that issue. Yeah. But I had no problem with it.
Yeah, I don't know.
You
know?
The thing is, it doesn't have to be him if you don't want him to be.
Right. No, it's not that I don't want, but it is. I mean, no, I'm not going to watch Empire Strikes Back and think I don't want Vader to be Luke's father and then he just magically isn't. Like the character.
So the point is that story continued. This story will not be continuing. So this world one shot.
Yeah.
You don't have, it doesn't have to be Rick's brother.
Well, you know,
I guarantee you she shows up at some point.
Yeah. I was just going to say, yep. I was just, yeah.
Guarantee it.
I agree.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but
yeah.
If she isn't killed.
Yeah. But it didn't ruin it for me. It just kind of for a moment I was like, oh, it's tying in. Like I just I was getting into the fact that it was its own thing, you know. But you know, it's fine. I enjoyed it.
This is the rewatch shits and everything.
All right,
that's fine.
I'm not shitting on everything. No, I'm gonna praise in a little bit. Don't worry. So don't you worry.
You're withholding your praise like a father.
Yes,
that's pretty good. You know. My father never said my comics were any good. Yeah. All New Hawkeye number 6 from Jeff Lemire and Ramon Perez is the last of the Lemire Perez Hawkeye. This is the end of the whole thing. Listeners of the last year or so will understand that I've had some issues with this and have really been trying to work it out. And yet, you may note that I read all of them. This is not
the,
like
is the book ending or is it new team coming in?
This book is ending with this team, so whenever they relaunch it or do whatever,
it'll be different. All new Hawkeye number 1 again?
Yes.
All really, really new Hawkeye. This time
new Hawkeye.
New.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're seriously new.
Here's a question, though. So,
yeah.
This was a 10 or 12 11. Issue, 11 issue story, right, that they told over the span of two relaunches?
Yes.
Do you think that hurt this story?
No.
You don't? Okay.
Not any more than many other things.
Yeah. It just felt so, like when we finished it, I'm like, oh god, this took forever. Like it just felt like it took a long time.
You know
to
what?
Finish this.
I read and it hasn't even been a year.
Yeah.
For whatever this 11 issue thing is, and I was like, all right, that seems fair enough. There were two different things they were trying to do, and that first one had all those flashbacks of sort of like back to the swordsman days, and then this was picking up on the mutant kid story, wrapped it up in one hell of a bow, by the way. I actually enjoyed this issue. I thought it was one of the ones that I didn't walk out of this going, oh, this is wrong. I think if we're going to deal, like what the book is now is like Kate and Clint trying to work out who they are and how that works together. There was one moment where he's like, you're my best friend. And I was like, no, no, I really love that. And I feel like this must be written in stone somewhere that like this does not turn into a romantic thing, which is the right choice for so many reasons.
Yeah.
I think like, even if there was like there's such a temptation probably to just do like, well, what about a drunken night issue? You know, and like, just don't do it. Just yeah. Leave it there. That's the right call completely. And I think that they towed that line.
Is it worse for them to be best friends or to be romantic?
For best you? Friends is better. But I feel like that was just a line that they put in there to hit an emotional beat, and that didn't ring true. So I don't think you'll go any further than that. I feel like if this book was to keep going, it feels like they just handed it over to be like Kate book again.
Yeah.
Is definitely what I got out of it. But the Clint in this felt a little more recognizable to the character who I think of, or at least as much as I'm going to get from him. The development of this Barney character is the strangest thing on earth,
isn't it? It's just like I feel like we've gotten like seven different characterizations of him over the past 10 years.
Well, he was full on bad guy,
right? Yeah,
playing evil Hawkeye in the Thunderbolts like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yep,
and now he's a schlub.
Yep,
and I agree with that. I don't think any of those are wrong. I'm not really like. I'm not committed to that character. Trickshot? Is that?
No, is I that his name. What was his name? Barney Hawkeye.
Barney Hawkeye?
Barney Barton.
Barney Hawkeye.
Barney Hawkeye's way better.
Trickshot. Whatever, yeah, you're right. Trickshot. Yeah, he went by Trickshot. Yep. Yeah.
Whatever you're. Oh. Yeah. Barney Hawkeye's better.
I think McCann wrote him as a different thing in that. And
McCann,
then...
Yeah, McCann's I feel like was the best because it played him off as a villain and tied them in as brothers and you know and like had the relationship and had the conflict. Where here I feel like in Fractions, was it in Fractions run?
Yeah.
That he showed up at the end and he's like, hey bro, you know, and like, and it was just like, oh, okay, you know. So I would like to note that I looked up Trickshot, I looked up him up on Wikipedia, and just randomly I see the sentence, unbeknownst to Hawkeye and the Avengers, Barney's body was stolen by Egghead. And that just sums up why I love comics.
Whatever version of Barney that is, that should be the version.
I agree, yeah.
Okay, so that's just fine. You know, pretty good this issue. Not a great run overall, but there were some interesting things. For me, I think it just suffers from it's not what the idea of the character is weird. Also, like, I don't know if I'm supposed to. I don't know that I'm reading a Kate story or a Clint story, but I don't feel like it's balanced right.
Right.
In some way, like I'm not sure whose story I'm supposed to be going with here, because it's too spread out on either.
Well, I mean, the book is called Hawkeye, so it's Hawkeye's story.
I know, but it's
they're both Hawkeye. Dun dun dun.
And Barney Hawkeye,
Barney Hawkeye.
From a tactical standpoint, that's a terrible way to name your team. Yeah. Like if Hawkeye, we were on this show and we were all named Ron, it would be stupid.
Hey, Ron.
Ron. Well, I mean,
what did you think, Ron? You first, Ron.
Other Ron. I said Ron.
No, Barney Ron.
Oh.
Oh.
But you know, it could be much worse, basically. So
are you going to follow this book to wherever it goes next?
I think that's a real question of what it is. I mean, there's definitely people who could be on it, and I go, I'm not going to read that.
If the book is called Barney Hawkeye, Son of Hawk Dad.
I don't know, the Hawk Dad thing through. I was like, no, I don't like that. Oh, that's a little.
Yeah, but
they find out their father was a hawk god totem, and that's where they get their trick shooting ability from.
I'll tell you what I don't like. The cover has him pulling an arrow back, and on the end of the arrow it says "splody" (parentheses). It goes boom (close parentheses). And I hate that.
Too cutesy.
Too cutesy. Yeah. I think it's time for them to put Hawkeye on the shelf for a little bit and then do something different. Because as much as I love Lemire and Perez, and I do like what Perez did with the flashbacks, with the more, you know, with the the pastels or whatever the medium he used to do that story, I think that the present day stuff was borrowing too much from the Aha defined look, and I think that they need to do something else. So
I don't think it was quite enough to those panels.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
and I love Perez. I think he's a wonderful cartoonist.
Here's the problem with Ramon Perez. Here's the problem with Ramon Perez. He's delightful. He's a delightful artist. and he's a handsome man, a really nice dresser.
Very handsome.
A bon vivant,
scarves.
I would say.
Yeah,
the scarves will.
You give him a project. You give him a project like that Henson book, where he goes away for a year and he comes back. He's going to blow you away, win an Eisner. You put him on a monthly book, and you get rushed work. That's the problem. That it's not rushed. It's just less than, you know.
You know what it is? He's actually a guy that if you take away too much of it, perfect example. Right. If you look at the last page.
Yep.
All of the sort of flashbacky stuff is super impressive. He's got amazing range. Now that last page there. Now look at the art on that. That's great. There's lots of stuff going on in the backgrounds. There's ink. There's texture. There's everything. But most of the stuff doesn't really look that good.
Right.
Most of it's a lot simpler than that. It's a lot quicker.
Yep.
Which I usually really like, but for some reason I felt like I was missing something in this. Maybe it's because it was just juxtaposed against the other textured stuff. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Ron, he's did you read his Spider-Man book he did with Dan Slott?
I did not.
I didn't either. I was curious if the art, what the art was like in that.
Sorry, everyone. That didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I follow him on Instagram, and I see the art he puts up from the books he's doing, and it's all great.
Right.
But I don't have any context for what it looks like month to month.
I do think you're right. Like, I think that guy needs to just make art and not necessarily make the X-Men.
Yep, agreed. So,
well, fair enough.
All right. So everyone out there in TV land, if you like the show, you want to support iFanboy, go to fanboy.com/support. And you can find two ways to help us out. One is to click on the Amazon link, and if you've got an ad blocker up, you won't see it. So there you go. Thanks for that. But you can also click on the little line that says support us on Amazon. You can click that too. You can go to Amazon and make your purchases. For instance, if you were to impulse buy a new television, use that Amazon link.
Just think, just as an example.
So. As in a random example of something that might happen.
Yep.
Support us by going to Amazon. You don't lose any money. Amazon does, and we can keep the lights on and fix our server problems when they happen, like this week. Also, help us out on that page by becoming an iFanboy member. For $3 a month or $30 a year, you can help us out directly, support the show that way. You can also, there's a donate button. If you need to, listen, some of you got tax extensions. You need to lose some cash real quick. You need to hide money somewhere. We'll hide your money. Donate at fanboy.com.
We will.
We will take all monies.
Listen, we may or may not be a money laundering service.
So ifanboy.com/support is how you help the show out. Thank you very much, everyone who does that. And why are all the books in the show number 6?
That's crazy.
I don't know. It's weird.
It's crazy.
5 of the 10 books.
Because they relaunched 6 months ago, and we have another 6 months to go before they relaunch everything again. Across all lines. Everyone,
all lines are crossing.
I gotta say, I didn't want to talk about this book again because I feel like we've been talking about it a lot, but I put it on the list because I was like, oh, that was also really good. And if I was to base just on the internet, who does not seem to like Max Landis, I don't think that I should like this, but I do, and I think that says a thing.
Well, two things. One, the book is Superman American Alien.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Important to know what we're talking about. Two, why would you care what the internet thinks to form your own opinion?
It puts an idea in your head. Oh, that guy's an asshole. And he might well be. I don't know. But he wrote this book well. And that's the only thing I really need to judge right now. I know lots of assholes who make great books.
Yeah.
But I don't even know that he's an asshole. It's a preconceived notion that I heard. And it gets in your head. What are you going to do? But the relationship that is put in this book where Clark is talking to his friends that he grew up with after he like is Superman, is trying to figure it out, and they bring it to him raw, and I was like, wow, this is, whoa. I've never seen this. Great.
They bring it to him raw, huh?
Raw. And they let it rip.
Did they let it rip? They let it rip to raw. It just was delightful. Just delightful.
Well, it was his friend. It was his friend Barney Superman.
So his friends from Smallville come to town. One of them, Pete Ross, and what they've encountered is, for lack of a better term, hipster Clark Kent, who has really jumped feet first into being a young man in the city. He wearing hipstery clothes, going to gallery openings.
He's urban. He's urban Superman.
These two rubes are not comfortable in his new world, and there's a good tension there. But that sort of masks the real tension, which is he doesn't really understand what it truly means that he is Superman to the rest of the world, and they're there to tell him. I thought this was good.
Yeah,
this is really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I was like, all right, I got to call that out. That's how much I dug it.
I think, for me at least, I actually read this as opposed to all the other American Alien issues when we talk about it on the show. I'm like, oh, I missed it, but I caught it. I'm not terribly familiar with Jonathan Case's work, but I plan to be after this.
I feel like he did a Vertigo book or something.
Really, I was really impressed by the art. I really liked it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I recognize the name. I will get back to you on that. But I want to Lucifer number 6. Mm-hmm. I was hesitant on this.
Well, you're in a Lucifer renaissance because you're really liking the TV show, right?
I have not.
Yeah, you write the blog about it.
All right, you do the recaps.
The web ring. The web ring.
The web ring, right, yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It's from 2001.
No, from 1998,
99. Yeah. I like this book. At first, I was worried that it was going to be a mirror to the TV show, sort of a case-by-case, issue-by-issue, like, different devil adventure every week, and it's not. It's been one long story, very involved with sort of the machinations of heaven and all the asshole angels that we have met in many, many Vertigo books. Those books are mostly about asshole angels.
Yes, that's true.
About it. There's a lot of that. And apparently, I'm really into that. Like, I'm like, wow, I just can't figure Gabriel out. What an asshole. But he's doing the right thing here. Boy, angels are mean. And maybe that's just so subversive that makes me like it. But I mean, overall, Holly Black and Lee Garbett on art. This is it's been a really fun series. And if you liked Lucifer, I would go so far as to say that you should probably be reading this. I mean, the old comic series.
I was like, yeah, if you like.
I don't know about the show. Right. It's been canceled, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But if you liked Vertigo stories of the past that dealt with asshole angels. Good news, folks. These ones are also delightful.
All right.
Again, is anybody else reading Karnak?
No.
No, but I like the misspelling on the script here. Yeah. Karnak with the extra C in there. It changes everything. Yeah, it's Carson. No, I'm not. Karnak. I'm not reading Karnak. Is it good?
So Karnak number 3 is a standalone. It takes place in the Marvel universe, but it's just Karnak who has no teragenesis mutation about him, apparently, which is a canon that's always been around. And I wasn't sure about that.
Hold on. You just gave some misinformation. Lucifer has not been canceled. In fact, it's been renewed.
The TV show?
Yes.
I swear I heard it was canceled. No. Maybe I'm just mixing it up with the Constantine show.
Yes.
Either way.
Josh is Constantine.
Lucifer, in fact, is doing very well in the ratings.
Did you catch how my pronunciation was right in between the two?
Yeah, I did.
I didn't pick up my mind until I got to the end, and I was like, well, it's too late now, and then you called me out on it. That was delightful. So Warren Ellis and Roland Boschi, just like Karnak is a S.H.I.E.L.D. operative, or at least he's been, like, subcontracted by S.H.I.E.L.D. to go do these things, and it's, like, super dark and strange, and Karnak's a weird person, and he says strange mystical things to people, and it looks beautiful, and it's a really fun book, and it's one of those. And I looked and I thought, I bet this is a Nick Lowe book, and it is, because that's the guy who brings in Warren Ellis to do really fun things at Marvel that sort of show up and they burn brightly really quick, and then they're gone. You know, like
you think he mutters to himself how much he hates what he's doing while he's writing it?
No, I think that it doesn't feel like they constrain him all that much. Like, he gets to tell his thing. He's not really being hit by, you know, the continuity or anything. It's like, you know, Next Wave was the same kind of thing, or Fury Max was another Nick Lowe book. I was just thinking about, like, he really is like that corner where those creators can go and make something.
Was Fury Max Garth Ennis?
It was.
Yeah, but Nick Lowe edited it, but he brought it. Like Lowe has those guys, you know, has relationships with those guys, so he gets them to do books. He did the last
I just have Misfits stuck in my head.
Yeah, no, that's why. that last fighter pilot on the Dinosaur Island miniseries that Garth Ennis did like in the last year. That was another Nick Lowe one. The first issue was a pick of the week. We can't remember anything anymore, and this is a problem. Either way, like, you guys should check this. This is a really good little miniseries, and it's not like weighed down by all that inhuman pterogenesis, you know, wipe out the mutants thing that's going on. You know, it's just an interesting character drawn and written really well.
All right. So I alluded to it earlier, but Astro City number 34 came out, and it wrapped up the current story with Steeljack, and I gotta admit, the last third of this it got to me, this is honestly, and like, it was funny because we were in the comic shop talking about it, and we're saying, I don't know how, but Astro City is perhaps better than it's ever been at this point, and it is the closest thing, I think, like, if you like Frank Capra movies, you should be reading Astro City, because this was a Frank Capra ending as if I've ever seen one. So basically what happens is that Steeljack, he solves the mystery. He stops the crazy billionaire who's framing supervillains for crimes to get there to amass his collection. And in doing so, gets arrested for the murder of that billionaire. And now he's back in prison, and he's just kind of resigned. And he's just like, he's old and he's tired. And he's just like, well, this is it. You know, I, you know, like, there's no way no one's going to believe what happened. And so he's just kind of accepted his fate. And then it gets to his trial, and just all of a sudden everyone comes and tells him what happened, and they speak on his behalf, and the woman supervillain testifies in his favor, and he gets a great lawyer, and just the whole community, the whole, all the witnesses come, and they say that he ends up a hero, and then he gets his mom's house, and it's just like, oh God.
And the girl.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know that it's better than it used to be, but it's as if it was always
this good.
It's as good as it ever is, and because that is built on top of the really good that was before it, like, it's just a swelling of enjoyment. Yeah. Like, it's delightful.
It's wiped away the stuff in the middle that was rough.
Yes, yeah, the dark age. Yes. That dark age period. Yeah.
I really like that this flies in the face of the "you can't go home again," because there was a while back there where you were like, oh, I guess we had our time with it, and that's fine. You know, like a band who does a couple of really good albums, and then they exchange, and whatever happens. But this is just like, no, you've still got exactly that thing, and it's still really good, which 20 years later is awesome.
Yeah. This got me choked up. I mean, Connor, did you feel the same? Or
I thought, it was another great issue, and I love the sort of sad sack Robert Mitchum-esque Steeljack character.
I love his face.
Who he just got a hangdog. He looks kind of like Robert Mitchum in his older years. And, he just gets getting caught up in these things he doesn't want to be in the middle of, and trying to do his best. And it was great. This was a great story. He spaces out the one shots with these longer tails. And
perfectly.
This was a good longer tail.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So good. But everybody coming, just like he didn't know, and he was just gonna spend the rest of his life in prison, and then he gets his mom's house.
Everybody was clapping for him when he came out of the courtroom, and the press was like, "Are you gonna join the
honor Superman guard?"
Yeah.
Oh God, I love it. So it was wonderful. It's just a superhero world I want to live in.
Well. Those are the books we're going to talk about. Go to ifanboy.com. You can find the post for the show. You can talk about those books or other books that you read this week, stuff you enjoyed, stuff you didn't enjoy.
I have one more comment about Astro City 34. It was delightful.
I really, like, I'm looking forward to a day. Like, I want to bring back the print website so that I can start seeing delightful Ron Richards on a lot of covers.
The print website?
Did you used to print the website out?
Yeah, you used to print them out.
guys not do that? I have a press thing.
A lot of wasted ink and paper.
Delightful.
The words! Where Monsters Dwell was that Garth Ennis series,
yes,
by the way.
This week, also, the Eisner nominations came out, the 2016 Eisner nominations, the comic book Oscars.
Yep.
And sometimes we like to talk about them. Usually we do. And the thing with the Eisners is there is no way to predict what they're going to be because the nomination committee changes every year. So it all depends on what the tastes of that current committee. It's not like every year the same body of people nominate stuff from that year, so you kind of know what their tastes are.
Well, that's an important thing to note, and it's also
roll the dice this year. What are we gonna get?
Yeah, and it's also important to note, like, it's a combination of things. It's on one hand, it's the fact that the Eisner nomination committee changes every year, and there's always a template. There's one retailer. There's one. Sometimes it's an industry person. They try to get an industry person, meaning somebody who works at a publisher. There's always a librarian. There is definitely a template that Jackie Estrada, who heads up the Eisners, uses when they recruit the nomination ceremony. But it's also important to note, and here's a little inside baseball. The publishers have to submit books for consideration, So. And it happens every now and then where a book that's not submitted does get nominated, but rarely. Additionally, also, a lot of the publishers have a different stance on the Eisners. I know, my experience at Image, it was very pro Eisner, and getting an award is good. I at least, this might be dated, but I don't think it changed. What Marvel does not care. And that's why historically you've seen a lack of Marvel presence, because they don't submit very much, which may or may not be related to the fact that the Eisners are always the same night as Marvel's party at San Diego, but who knows? but
sports bar?
Yeah. but yeah, so that's what it is. And so, so it's funny because I think looking at this list, the past couple of years, I feel like the nominations have tried to represent publishers and material that is not mainstream or that is not, not gets as much attention, which I think sometimes is good, sometimes is bad. I think looking at this year's nominations also shows what a shitty year last year was for comics. That's my take on it. So
I don't know about that necessarily.
Yeah. I thought 2015 overall was a weaker year, and so in terms of mainstream stuff. But that said, some of the nominations were good and well deserved. And Lord knows if Jason Aaron doesn't win Best Writer, I'm gonna fly down to San Diego and riot. So
has he won before?
I don't think so.
Personally, I would like to have seen Airboy get some nominations.
Agreed.
I don't know
if
it's submitted or not, but
yeah, agreed.
That was my book of the year, and if I'm on the committee, that's what I'm gonna nominate.
Yeah.
For every category I can, but. Yeah. I'm not on the committee, so that's fine. Let's talk about what's on the list.
Yep.
Best limited series, three of the five are Image, Chrononauts, The Fade Out, Lady Killer, Minimum Wage, and The Spire. So, Josh, I'm sure you're
I was really happy to see Minimum Wage.
Yep.
I don't know about Chrononauts being on there compared to all the output of everything over there, but that's pretty subjective. I would say there's just other Mark Miller stuff I liked more than that. But it is certainly good as a limited series.
Was Starlight last year?
No, Starlight was the year before.
No, that's older.
The year before.
Yeah. I'd vote for The Fade Out in this category if I'm voting.
Yeah, I really liked Minimum Wage, but that's really just a me thing, so I get that.
The Fade Out is the winner on this. Yeah. So.
Best new series. I don't read most of those.
Bitch Planet, Harrow County, Kaiju Max.
Yeah.
Monstrous Paper Girls, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. Paper Girls is the only one I'm reading, so
this one's going to be interesting because I mean, Paper Girls is BKV and Cliff, also got nominated for a couple of art, I think best cover or stuff like
that.
Yeah. But I've heard great things about Kaiju Max. I haven't got a chance to read it yet.
Harrow County, I like Cullen Bunn's indie work a lot. I'm not a horror guy, but Tyler Crook. Was the guy who did that Rasputin book for Oni a while ago, and then he did BPRD for a while. So like that's a great team.
Yeah, and Monstrous is from I stopped reading at the first issue because it's not for me, but I hear it's selling great, and people are loving it, and it seems to be a hit for Marjorie Liu, so that's cool, and Santa Takeda, so that's yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. Ladies are represented.
Best continuing series. This was the first one where I was like, okay, this is going to be an interesting year for nominations. Bandette from Monkey Brain, Giant Days from Boom, Invincible from Image, Silver Surfer from Marvel, and Southern Bastards from Image.
I mean, hands down for me, Southern Bastards.
Out of these, yes. I liked seeing Invincible get a nomination.
That's part of the Robert's ongoing, you know, like nobody reads Invincible problem, you know, and so trying to get more attention for it that way, which is great.
Well, you know what?
I think it's deserving.
The last year was really good, and it broke a lot of, like, it would be so easy for that book to just go into autopilot, and it didn't. It did the thing where he went back in time and screwed everything up, and like, there's been some strong books out of there, and Ryan Ottley, like, you know, some people are on a book for a really long time, they find a lot of shortcuts or whatever, like, he brings it every single issue in the way, you know, with as much energy as he always has, and, you know, I'm totally down with that. I think it's more inventive than The Walking Dead,
right?
You know, in that way, though it doesn't sell as much.
Yeah.
But it really, it's like that superhero book that it's your, I mean, it's been going on so long now that it is exactly like if you'd been reading Spider-Man, you know, from the 60s through the 80s. Like, it feels like that long, which is cool.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's jump around. Let's see.
I just want to say, in general, anywhere that Ed Piskor and Hip Hop Family Tree is nominated, they've got my vote.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's gonna win something. I think he
deserves it. He's doing a groundbreaking format in that he's basically doing documentary comic book cartooning.
Yeah.
On a music topic with history and characters, and, you know, it's expansive and fantastic. Like, the cartooning is wonderful, the way he's drawing all of these different real life characters.
Yeah. But what's funny though is that he got nominated for Best Cover Artist, along with Joelle Jones, Raphael Albuquerque, and David Aja, and for the first time ever, Amanda Connor, who, you know, and I feel, you know, like you got to give Amanda Connor that award for Best Cover Artist. I mean, I think that, that's a tough category. It's a tough, tough category.
It is.
Yeah.
It should be.
Yeah.
And I was instantly like, well, where's Darwin Cook? And that was last year. So.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is that this shows you how far down DC has fallen.
Yeah.
I did a search. I'm on the page for the nominations. I did a DC, you know, a keyword Nothing. Search for DC.
Nothing.
I got nine. There's nine instances, but they're almost all Vertigo.
They're all Vertigo or a creator who has a DC credit, not for something that's DC.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So. The only one that's really, really solely DC is, I think, the Amanda Connor cover art one for Harley Quinn, and then the collected edition, which, you know, for all DC's faults, we know their strength lies in their collected editions.
Yeah.
They do those.
Their archives are loaded.
Yeah. So they're in a tough spot right now. They're critically slammed. They are sales wise. They're slammed.
Yep. And who knows? I don't know what they submitted or not. And there was a whole hubbub in comics this past week with the announcement that Shelley Bond is being dismissed from her position at Vertigo, who's heading up Vertigo. And Vertigo did a whole bunch of stuff. And if they submitted it and it didn't get nominated, like, who knows that you know, there's a rumor that's a part of it. You know, the anthology they did get. I mean, that in Best Short Story, there's that Tom King, John Paul Leon story from the Vertigo Quarterly Black.
But all that stuff they put out, they should have gotten something. Yeah. And also, Tom King is a hell of a short story writer.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I have another question for you guys. Let's put you in the death match here and choose a best colorist from among Laura Allred, Jordi Belair, Elizabeth Breitweiser, John Rauch, Dave Stewart.
I'll tell you that I'm pissed that Matt Wilson isn't here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's.
Pick one. If you have a vote,
I'm giving it to Jordy. I'm giving it to Jordy because Dave Stewart has 100 of these.
Yeah,
it takes nothing away from him, but he's won every year, as he should have. And then you look at what Elizabeth Breitweiser does, which is great, but is of a type. Jordi Belair is working on so many different things and bringing something unique to each of those products, and they're all excellent.
Yeah, and her output is unlike anybody else's. Yeah,
and Laura Allred, again, what she does is great, but she does a thing.
Yep.
Whereas, like, Jordi managed to do something unique for each thing, but still making it her. And I don't know that these other people can do that. Dave Stewart can probably do that to a certain extent, but it might be that Jordy does that better.
Yeah.
She doesn't do what Dave Stewart does as well as he does, but she does all those other things better than anybody else.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, on the topic of coloring, we talked about when we talked about Poe Dameron and we talked about Chris Eliopoulos' short story that was colored by Jordy Belair. I got to spend some time with Chris Eliopoulos last weekend, and he is not happy.
In general? Or
No, about Josh's comments about his lack of ability as a colorist. Oh. So
that is not what I said.
So Josh, I would watch yourself if you're ever in New Jersey, because Eliopoulos has got a target on you. So
yeah, well, if you're in New Jersey,
he'll come at you with a rake.
Get off my lawn.
Anyway, that's a good category though, that coloring.
Yeah.
I was looking at best comics related periodical or journalism, and there's only one website.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well,
three. Tomorrow's publications.
Yeah.
And I don't think people know what the hell to do with that.
Yeah. Technically,
it is a comics related periodical.
Yeah, it's true.
Which covers basically everything.
What a bullshit category.
It is. That is the one category that identifies how little. I mean, like, if you talk about the complaint of the Eisner organization being not in touch with comics, like, that's the one that sums it up the most, I think. So,
well, okay.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not suggesting that we should. In the past, I would have suggested we'd offer that. This has nothing to do with that.
Sure,
we do not deserve to be. I want to just make that clear. This is not. At some point in the past, I wrote to them and I was like, "Why don't you have a podcast category?" And they said, "Well, it would be too difficult to, you know, listen to all of them or whatever." Which I was like, "Okay, it's kind of bullshit though, because it's like anything else.
It's just hard to read all the comics."
Yeah,
exactly. And you could submit a bunch of, you know,
You could do it in advance. Like, there are ways to
everybody
do it.
Everybody could submit an episode of a thing that they do.
Hey, and one show,
just like the Emmys or whatever, and it's important. I mean, comics are podcasts are a huge part of the comics community.
Yep,
they are,
agreed.
And so I feel like it's as valuable as any sort of printed website or, you know, prose based thing. And
it's also been 10 years, and they seem to be no closer to figuring out how they're gonna, you know, what they're gonna do.
I don't think they're going to. I mean, Jackie Estrada runs the thing. She made that call, and whatever. Other than that, I mean, I have my problems with comics journalism and the fact that every pro
there isn't
the world,
any.
Yeah.
Well, every pro in the world is always mad about people writing about comics who don't know what they're doing. And I'm like, it's a fan based industry with no money behind it. There's like six people who get paid to do it and do it well and are professional, and everybody else is doing it because they want to be part of it and they love it, and they're probably not going to be good at it for a while, but they probably won't stick with it long enough to get good at it. And if somebody's just reviewing comics on a Tumblr site.
Yeah.
You know, the good or the bad, but don't get mad about it. There's not, it's on the job training. This is a thing that bugs me. Every time I see a pro complaining about bad reviewers, I'm like, don't you understand? There's not Time Magazine. There's not like they can hire somebody,
right?
You know, who's really good at reviewing comics. It takes, you know.
Yep. So. All right. Well, yeah, if you do a Google search for Eisner nominations 2016, you can see the full list. And if you want to go to ifanboy.com and comment on this post and share your thoughts about the Eisner nominations, let's hear it. And when voting starts, if you're a creator and you're listening to it, make the right call. Jason Aaron for best writer. So there you go.
I love how you got just a little mobby. You make the right,
Do the right thing. Do the right thing.
Yeah.
Come on.
So we're going to skip email this week because we talked about the Eisners, but we'll be back next week with your emails, and we want to hear from you. It's always great to hear from you. So email us at contact@ifanboy.com, and don't forget to tell us where you're from, who you are. Keep it short to about a paragraph or so.
We can't read your novel on the air.
Exactly. As much as we enjoy reading about it and talking about you in our private chat, we can't read it on air. But also don't forget to mention how long you thought about it. So that's important.
That's not a problem, by the way.
If you have a novel reacting to something we said, put it in the comments. That's what the comments are for.
Exactly.
Also, someone wrote in and they wanted to know if we sell Jeepers Creepers bobbleheads. And Robin, we are looking in the storerooms. We're checking things out. We have inventory sort of scattered all around, and there was a computer outage.
We had a fire at our warehouse in Dumbo.
And the Hoboken plant completely offline.
But listen. Yeah. But here's the thing, guys. I got a spreadsheet that shows me the number of units of Jeepers Creepers bobbleheads, and we got a problem.
There's definitely a problem.
Yeah, there's definitely a problem. So.
I can't reconcile this. I cannot reconcile this.
Do people at home know this, that every once in a while we get an email or a voicemail from somebody who seems to have no idea what it is we do? They just look at comics and they ask us some Can I get you got Thor 40?
or to price something. What's the value of this comic?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're the best emails and voicemails of all.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about some other shows we do. Justice League vs. Teen Titans came out last week, and that's where the Animation Brain Trust talked about the latest DC Universe animated film, Justice League vs. Teen Titans. You can find that on the feed behind two shows back because...
We just finally released the podcast talking about Daredevil season number 2. Connor, myself, and our good friend Mike Romo got on the horn, and we talked for a good hour, so a little less than an hour, about the second... About 45 minutes. But the second season of Daredevil that's available on Netflix. All in all, it was, I believe, positively received. Some critiques here and there, but it was a fun conversation. It was a lot.
So 45 minutes. That's about, what, like a third of a normal episode of Daredevil?
Yeah.
And there's 30 of them in a season, so.
But let me tell you, it was a lot less intense than the Batman v Superman podcast. So, yeah. But go, if you're curious what we thought about Daredevil 2 months later, go listen to that and comment on that.
It's only been 6 weeks.
Six weeks.
Batman versus Superman has affected everything.
It really has.
I watched Jurassic World and I was like, it's not that bad. Because I saw Batman versus Superman.
Well, what might change everything again is the upcoming movie release on May 6th, Captain America Civil War, comes out in the United States. And all three of us will be on a podcast to talk about it. So that's going to be interesting. I've seen it. I'm not allowed to talk about it. So there you go.
Let's tap the brakes on guaranteeing we're all going to be on a show.
Well,
you never know.
You never know. Fair enough. We're going to do our best. Listen, I am dragging Josh by his collar to the movies on Thursday night.
I suggested it, you lout. It's going to be delightful.
It's going to be delightful. So stay tuned for that. We're going to do our best to get that out as quickly as possible on the weekend of May 6th, Captain America Civil War. There you go.
I don't know how long we will keep telling you about Goodfellas Minute, but
forever.
It was a lot of work. And so for now, you're just going to have to listen. If you haven't listened to Goodfellas Minute, that's our minute by minute breakdown, 145 episodes of us talking about Goodfellas. Each episode equals 1 minute of the movie. You can listen to it forever. You should listen to it again if you listen to it once. You'll probably pick out something you didn't know, just like the movie itself. That's what I say. Go to goodfellasminute.com, and we're very proud of that work.
Head over to ifanboy.com and comment on this show. Talk about this week's books. You can find other podcasts we just mentioned. You can follow us on facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter to find out the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at RonXO.
If you like this show, you like Goodfellas Minute, you like any of the podcasts you listen to, no one's going to hear about on the Eisners, so you should probably go to iTunes and write a review and rate it or let people know about it in social media. And eventually, someday, maybe someone will recognize that they're an important part of the comic book landscape. We won't be doing it by then, but still, you should go do that. But spread the word about the podcasts you love, including this one and others, because you're very important to the whole process when you do that. Thanks.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for this week. So until then, or until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
Connor, are you okay to do all the stuff?
Yeah, how are you feeling?
I'm still coughing up shit.
Well, you might want to get that looked at.
It's just dust.
If you're coughing solids? If you're coughing up shit, then that's just something. Shit, yeah. Something's really wrong. Then I just
something got crossed up in my system.
I got a wire crossed or something. You're just coughing up, and you're like, oh god, is this shit? I think this is shit.
Yeah, doctor. So here's the thing.
Hey, Megan, look at this. I think this is fecal matter.
That's not good. I looked on WebMD, and it
means cancer.
I mean, I know you're not supposed to do that, but I'm pretty sure shit doesn't come out of your throat, so I looked anyway. It's like, no. Anyway, we need to go to the hospital right now.
Listen, this is a problem.
No, honestly, we need to put that sandwich down.
Oh, God. All right, I'm sorry. That was great.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.